Welcome to the Biology of Trauma podcast, the show that provides professionals with the knowledge and tools for effective, science-based solutions for the trauma healing journey. I am your host, Dr. Amy, and I've done the hard work so you can stop your endless searching, have a roadmap for your own work, and be able to help others more powerfully. Welcome to this episode of the Biology of Trauma podcast. I am your host, Dr. Amy. And trauma is something that we will all experience at various points in our lives. It's inevitable. It's part of life, just like grief, change, loss, especially when we understand trauma from the experience of the body as an experience of overwhelm. It is something we will all experience in our life. And when the trauma response isn't completed, that is when it gets stored in the body and manifests itself as a chronic illness. Going to your medical practitioner isn't necessarily going to take care of the issue because it's the trauma and it's driving our nervous system. That is at the core of it all. In this episode, Gabor Mate and I share our lessons learned about trauma and chronic illness throughout our careers as medical physicians and working in addiction medicine. It's always special for me to have a conversation with Gabor since he was the one who really inspired me to go into addiction medicine. I was originally in surgery, general surgery, and I was looking for a way to bring trauma and attachment into medicine. And addiction medicine is about as close as you can get to trauma in medicine. My patients became my teachers. In this episode, we will answer the question, with our focus on the emotional and social aspects of trauma, what biology piece have we missed? Here is just some of what you will learn in this episode. Why chronic health conditions can be a sign of trauma and dysregulation. How most chronic illnesses are less about genetics and more about trauma. The role copper excess plays in trauma and depression. How trauma makes our body more susceptible to toxins. And the benefits of starting with regulation for chronic illness. I'm very excited to have Dr. Gabor here with us today. Thank you for your time. Thank you for the work that you've done. I feel like you have been a leader and you have been the expert in the trauma disease connection now for decades. And you inspired me so much from my own career and moving that into what I do now. And so from the bottom of my heart, I thank you.
Especially as physicians, I'm sure that in your training, as in my training, trauma awareness was completely lacking. And yet when you go out and practice, and if your eyes are open, if your ears are perked, you realize that virtually every chronic condition you ever deal with has got a traumatic template to it. You know, I'm talking about autoimmune disease, I'm talking about addiction, I'm talking about mental health conditions, malignancy. And what's frustrating, perhaps for you, as for me, is these are not just sort of insights. The science is there. In other words, the science of mind-body unity and the relationship of trauma and to physical and mental pathology, or what we call pathology, is so well established in the scientific literature. And yet, this is science that's utterly ignored in medical training and in medical practice. So people go to physicians and they're seen as the bearers of individual biological organs, each with its own pathology, and the connections between that person's life, that person's existence, that person's relationship to the world, and fundamentally their relationship to themselves is completely missing, which is why you and I get learned so much and do this work. And with that, I'd like to turn it to your work, if that's okay. And the first thing I want to ask you, Amy, is, I look at your credentials and all the training that you've had, general surgery and functional medicine and preventive medicine and public health and addiction medicine. First of all, how is there time in one lifetime to do all that training? But secondly, and most importantly, actually, what is it that impelled you to explore all those fields? I mean, that's very unusual. What sent you to all these different realms of medicine? What was driving you so much?
I started out with a very conventional medical pathway. And that I assumed that that's where I was going to be because that's all I knew, Gabor. Like, that's all I knew. I'm assuming it might have been the same for you, that when you go into medicine, even before you get to medical school, like the path is already laid out for you. You already know that you're going to pick a specialty, a field, but then you go through medical school residency, and then you work in a hospital or a clinic, and this is what you do the rest of your life. And so for me, looking back, there were two events that completely changed my course of my career. And the first was that coming out of my master's in biochemistry, and before jumping into third year of medicine or medical school, I decided to become a foster parent. And 4-year-old Miguel landed in my home at that time. And because of what the social workers told me would be his trajectory, if he were not adopted, given his history, given his behaviors, given the extent to which he had already failed several home placements in the past, I still made the decision as a third year medical student to adopt him. And it was with the intention of giving him the best chances to have a different life than what I saw unfolding before him, given what I knew from other children who had similar degrees to which their trauma was showing up in their life. And in the process, it was very hard. And his behaviors at that time were so extreme that most people wouldn't believe me when I tell them that he tried to kill me. He would pull out knives. He would talk about killing me. He would destroy things all around him in his rages. And my home became someplace where I did not feel safe. And this is what fueled me. This is what drove me to trying to figure out what was going on. Why was he doing this? Help me understand so that I knew how to help him. But before I could help him, I knew that I needed to understand it. And none of my training in medical school prepared me for this. The solution at that time, and probably still is, let's medicate him. But that's not the real problem. And so that's what drove me initially. Then in 2014, I developed severe fatigue, and I was now at the end of my third year of general surgery residency, transplant surgery rotation, no less, Gabor, and my body gave out.
Sorry to interrupt, but you know, one of my previous books is called When the Body Says No, and literally your body was saying no.
And that's when I found that book of yours. And that's when you started to become a heavy influence in my life. And this is what happened, was I started to see my symptoms as expressions of trauma, as expressions of my body telling me something that I had never been willing to listen to before.
Yeah.
And this is what then changed my whole personal journey, because up until now, it had all been about Miguel. And he was finally in a good place. But now this became about me. And what I first had to learn from your book primarily was that, wait a second, these symptoms that I'm having, because it really wasn't just the fatigue, it was anxiety and depression, and my autoimmune markers were high, and I had all of these other things going on that I found out. And I realized, wait a second, these are all conditions that I know from my studies now are related to adverse childhood experiences.
Yeah.
But yet, Gabor, that was not my story, or at least so I thought. Right? Like I didn't have the background that Miguel had. So why would my body have the same expression as someone who had a very hard childhood? In my mind, again, it didn't make sense. And I need to understand things. I want to understand things. So that's where that became the second event that fueled my desire to then go into functional medicine and trauma therapy trainings and somatic experiencing training, trying to figure out then the pieces for myself, my personal journey, not having any idea that it would ever turn into the work that I do. That wasn't the intention at that time. It was just, how do I heal myself?
Right. Certainly for me, it wasn't just my clinical work. It was also my work having to do with my own stuff. But once you start doing this work, then you find that it's impossible not to see it. Like when you see your clients, your patients, and it doesn't matter what they come in with, if it's a chronic condition, it's almost in every case, there's some trauma underneath it. And you just begin to see it and you can't help but see it.
And I was taught that most chronic conditions that run in families are genetic.
Yeah.
Yet I started seeing a very different picture. I started to see it as, no, like, this is their nervous system dysregulation. This is trauma being passed on through generations. This isn't a genetic thing. These are learned ways of going through life, of living life, of not dealing with trauma. That's what these symptoms are being passed on. And you're right. I've come to the same conclusion that all chronic health issues are driven by a dysregulated nervous system.
Yeah. Well, talk more about that. Talk more about the nervous system. I know you studied polyvagal theory, and in your 21-week course, you incorporate it. So why are we putting such an important emphasis on the nervous system, as I do as well, but you do it more explicitly than I do? What is that? What is that all about for you?
This was part of my healing journey where I could feel the differences in the, what I called like the states of my nervous system. And I could start to tell, wait a second, I'm in trauma physiology right now. I'm in this heaviness. I'm in this low state. And then I could feel myself being in a high energy and a stress state where I'm feeling like I'm a, you know, the hamster on a wheel. So I started to be able to feel that, wait a second, like there are different operating systems of my body. And that's when I started to literally map out like, okay, this is what seems to be happening. And so when I then came across Dr. Steve Porges' work and the polyvagal theory, it made perfect sense to what I was already experiencing in my body. And I could tell that when my body was going into that shutdown place, when my body was saying no, that I would develop all of these symptoms. My gut would be off, my sleep would be off, I would have worse of the autoimmune symptoms, the inflammation. And so I could tell early on that my nervous system was driving my health symptoms. Yeah. And this is exactly what other people are finding as well. So it makes me think of Kimberly. And Kimberly is one that came through the 21-day journey. And she was one that she found she had been through different doctors, therapists, counselors for 10 years and finally found that, wait a second, what my body responds to the most is calming my nervous system down.
Yeah.
That is what makes the biggest difference. It's not genetics. It took her 10 years of not feeling well to figure this out. And with the tools that she had for the nervous system, like it gives her hope that, like I can do something different. I can have a better health because I have the tools for my nervous system.
Let me make a couple of points here. First of all, what you say about genetics, there are a few diseases, very rare, that are purely genetics driven. Like if you have the gene, you'll have the disease. In my family, there's muscular dystrophy. Those people that inherit the gene, they'll have the disease. Huntington's chorea, if you have the gene, 99% of the time, you're going to have the disease. But most diseases are not like that. Those diseases are very, very rare. There are some diseases where there's some genetic predisposition, like in some cases of breast cancer. There are breast cancer genes, ovarian cancer genes, but out of 100 women with breast cancer, only 7 have the gene. 93 do not. So in most cases, even if genes are present, they don't determine the disease. And in most cases, in the vast majority of medical conditions, there's no significant genetic contribution at all. None. Not in terms of determining disease. And I talk about this in The Myth of Normal, and it's one of these myths that addiction is genetic and depression is genetic and autoimmune disease. No, they're not. They're not. There's very little proof for that. In fact, lots of proof to the opposite. When it comes to the nervous system, people need to understand that these systems don't function in separation from each other. It's not like we have an immune system and a nervous system and a gut and a cardiovascular system and an emotional system. These are not separate systems. They're all one part of one unit. They're all connected. Not even connected. They're one. So that when you talk about calming the nervous system, I think you're talking about calming a nervous system that has been dysregulated by a lifetime of trauma and stress. Isn't that right? It's not just a nervous system in isolation.
No, it's the body system. It's a whole body living, like you say, in this place of stress and trauma. And what that has created is a lifetime of living in fear, a lifetime of feeling insecure. and all of the cellular responses to living in fear, because it's not just our emotions that we get guarded and we brace and we try to protect ourselves. Like, that's happening on a cellular level too. And then that's what becomes our health symptoms. So that we're looking at really having this baseline insecurity and fear showing up on a cellular level for our health.
When it comes to cells, you talk about the mitochondria. What is your focus on these little things called mitochondria?
In my studies, they've become pivotal to the understanding of trauma, which is fascinating because that's not at all what I learned in medical school. But they are me like at the core of trauma, because trauma is an energy problem. If we had more energy, if we had more resources, we would be able to respond to the problems and stress in our life and not have it become something where we go into a state of helplessness and powerlessness.
Right.
And what gives us energy is our mitochondria. So we have mitochondria in all of our cells. There can be up to 30 million, I think, in each cell. And yet in the nervous system, in the nerve cells, which are what communicate our stress response and our trauma response, there are 300 million mitochondria in each neuron.
So the nervous system, nerve cells, neurons have more mitochondria than other cells in the body. Is that right?
That is right. So they are much more sensitive to energy problems and anything that will decrease the mitochondria's ability to keep us fueled and powered with energy or ATP in the body.
So relate that to somebody like, so there's this condition that most doctors don't understand, and some of them still don't even believe exists, chronic fatigue syndrome, you know? And often people come in with chronic fatigue and the doctors tell them it's all in your heads, you know? You're suggesting that there's actually something happening. And I know the condition exists and it's totally related to people's stresses and traumas. What's happening on the cellular level then is you're saying that something's happening in their nerve cells? Is that what you're saying?
Exactly. Something is happening that's affecting the nerve cells' ability to respond to stress. And when we can't respond to stress, we will go into that place of helplessness. We'll go into that trauma physiology, that trauma response in the body. And so then we get to look at, well, then what's affecting my mitochondria? Which is fascinating, because that has never been a question that has come up in trauma work before, right? Like typically trauma therapy, like you go talk to a therapist, you go talk to a counselor. You don't talk about your mitochondria. And so here we come along and I'm like, no, there's this whole biology of trauma, and we have to look at those things that are affecting our mitochondria. Copper, for example, copper excess is one of those factors that actually is associated with chronic fatigue syndrome. Why? Because it's toxicity to the neurons, to the nerve cells, and it increases their baseline stress. So they're not able to handle emotional stress. They have higher levels of adrenaline, which then if they're not able to metabolize that, it pushes the body into a trauma response. So there's this whole biology that actually will drive a trauma response.
So how do you get a copper excess?
You can get a copper excess for a couple of reasons. One, you have a zinc deficiency. So there's a copper to zinc ratio that is a healthy one. It's around 1.2, 1.3. And if the zinc is low, which is one of the most common nutrient deficiencies in those with a mood or mental health challenge, if that zinc is low, then you end up having a copper excess, which is a neurotoxin for the nervous system, for the mitochondria. You can also have inability to clear out copper well. And so this is where your genetics can influence this and your ability to clear out copper. And this is what actually drives a lot of the postpartum depression, because the copper is related to estrogen. And so as the estrogen goes up, the baby needs copper. So during pregnancy, copper levels are going up. Mom's protected. Baby gets all that copper because it is needed for their nervous system. But then once baby's delivered, mom then, if she has an inability to clear out copper well, all of this copper is sitting in her system and she gets postpartum depression or anxiety or postpartum psychosis because she's not able to clear out that copper. So copper actually is one of the common things that we need to look for in someone's biology if they have this not only chronic fatigue, but this pattern of continuing to go into and kind of get stuck in a trauma response with the health symptoms that come with that.
So two questions. One is, first of all, do you do that through blood tests, or what kind of measurements do you take of that?
Yes. For the copper, you can do blood tests. You also need to measure the protein that's bound to copper in the blood, because that would be the other reason for excess copper, is if it's bound to protein, then it's protected. But if it's just free copper, that's when it's can be a toxic effect if it's in that higher ratio. So you need to test for copper, for zinc, and the protein that's called ceruloplasmin.
As a family physician, so I saw a lot of postpartum depression. And to tell you the truth, I never occurred to me to look at copper, and you know, it just wasn't part of my awareness. But, and here's my question, in every case of postpartum depression, number one, the woman had a childhood trauma or stress significant, which the birth of the baby, you know, triggered, number one. Number two, the depression wasn't just in the woman, it was in the relationship. The woman was lacking sufficient support in her environment. So we diagnose the woman as having this so-called disease, but in fact, what it represents is a whole manifestation of her entire life and her current relationship with her spouse and the environment. That's got nothing to do with copper. It's just got to do with human relationships and the nervous system and emotional dynamics. How do you bring it all together?
And this is where we go back to our conversation of the body is one. We can't separate the effect of relationship stress and trauma on the response of our tissues. And so when we have those kinds of stress and trauma, it makes our body more susceptible to toxins, not only copper, but a lot of other toxins as well. So that toxins and trauma, like, they always run together. And you can ask the question, the chicken and egg question, well, which came first? Did the trauma come first? And that caused the absorption, the invitation for toxins, and then the inability to clear those out, maybe? Or did the toxins come first and they created the environment for one to not make the decisions about getting into a healthy relationship or not being able to process trauma because it feels too overwhelming to connect with a body that's irritable from the neurotoxin effect of the copper? So for me, this is where it's all integrated. And that's what I found from my healing journey, is that I couldn't just focus on one thing. I couldn't just do, for example, like the somatic work and learn how to connect with my body. I couldn't just do parts work, which has been another essential piece for me. I also had to bring in the biology piece, because they're all affecting the nervous system all at the same time. And so when I can integrate those pieces, I saw that I was able to experience what I call just more expansion in my healing. Whereas before, I would come up to a wall and I would get blocked and my body would shut down, and I didn't know why until I started integrating these pieces and seeing, oh, like, they're all affecting the nervous system. So of course I have to integrate all of them in the healing journey.
I didn't think about the biology of it. Now you're making me rethink it now, but certainly I think the point remains that you can't look at anything in isolation. The human body is not an isolated organ. Our heart is, or organism, the heart is not an isolated organ. It's all one. You mentioned this expansion, and I know in your 3-week course, I think your third week is about expansion. Do you want to run through that, those 3 weeks? Because I think the first one is about safety, which is about, we've been, you know, that's sort of the polyvagal, getting the nervous system to in a state of safety, which is a state of replenishment and regeneration. What are these 3 weeks that you guide people through?
Well, like you, like my lessons learned, so much come from the mistakes that I've made on my own healing journey. I did not do this, what I call the essential sequence. I did not do this for myself because I didn't know this at that time, right? At that time, I was doing the best that I could with the information that I had. And as I started piecing together the different components, that's what I landed on. And you know, you talk about the biology piece and where does this fit in? As much as I am still a medical physician, and so I am very interested in how the biology affects our nervous system and can hold us back or hold us stuck, I found that that's not where I need to start people. I actually need to start people with this connection with their body and creating different experiences for themselves first. And even with that, Gabor, I started to see changes in their biology just from doing those exercises. And that's what affirmed for me that this is the work that also changes our biology. We can't separate it. And it's an essential piece. For me, it's become the foundational piece and the foundational journey. So I start everyone with creating, teaching them for themselves how to do this, how to create a felt sense of safety for their body. Now, I know that sounds simple. And yet for anyone who is like me, sounds like has been like you in the past, where we love to live in our heads, we love to work, we love to study, we love to think, but actually feel, that for me was a very hard step. Somehow, like that journey between my head and my body was the farthest journey I've ever had to take.
Well, yeah, it's the shortest and the hardest one, isn't it?
Would you agree with us that the journey between our head and our body can be short and yet the hardest one? And that is where I will conclude part one of this interview with Dr. Gabor Mate on trauma and chronic illnesses. When we have a chronic health condition, we might not realize that the physical symptoms are just an expression of something larger and really something deeper, and that is called our autonomic nervous system. And the solution is not just connecting with our body. We need to have the knowledge, the tools, and the skills to know what to do. Yes, we need to connect and also listen and respond to what our body is saying that it needs. And the research suggests that this is key, being able to respond and create the different felt senses that our body needs. When the body, again, the autonomic nervous system, not just the brain, has a greater degree of regulation, it does start to change our biology. Many medical practitioners are having their patients start with this foundational journey with me so their body can be more receptive to the protocols for their health symptoms. The results? Just with more regulation in 21 days of somatic exercises, people experience a 26% decrease in daily physical pain. Some are getting off their pain medications. 30% decrease in fatigue, with some getting off of their autoimmune, thyroid, or steroid medications. 30% decrease in sleep issues, digestive issues, anxiety, depression. This is why I now also start everyone with learning to lay a foundation of regulation. It is something that we can learn how to do. It's why I teach those coming into the biology of trauma professional training these skills, not only for themselves, but for those that they're helping so that they can help their people lay this foundation for regulation that starts to change our biology. Thank you for joining me for this episode on the Biology of Trauma podcast. I don't always ask this, but please take a moment and rate this podcast with your 5-star rating. It makes a big difference for communicating to others the value that you find here, and it will help them find what they need to hear today. In the show notes, there is a place for you to leave your comments and questions so I know more of what to give you. And as always, I will have helpful links for you. When part two of this interview drops, I will leave that link there, and that will drop on March 29, part two of Lessons Learned with Dr. Gabor Mate. I've done a previous podcast interview with Dr. Gabor Mate, and this was on how does trauma manifest in the body. I will have the link for that. I will have a link for the 3 video training series that I do on the biology of trauma overview for those interested in the professional training. And then for the science, we talked about copper excess, so I will have a link for the 3 most common biochemical imbalances that I see with those who have stored trauma in their body, mood, or mental health challenges. I will also include the link to my guide on the steps to identify and heal trauma so that you can understand the body's trauma response and our path out. The Essential Sequence Guide is what I will also share as well. And this goes into the details of our path out. It's where you will get a handle on the physiology of safely bringing the body out of stored trauma. There is an essential sequence, and I want you to know that. And then the link for the foundational journey for you to see when I'm leading the next group through and when you might be ready for your journey into your nervous system, building that foundation of regulation to start to change your biology. And with that, I am your host, Dr. Amy. And until next episode, lots of love. Thank you for joining me today. If you enjoyed today's show, be sure to subscribe. We definitely will learn, laugh, and sometimes cry together on this healing journey, and you won't want to miss an episode. Give my podcast 5 stars, share it with a friend or colleague,
If you felt an impact as it truly helps get the word out and breaking the paradigm of how we do trauma work. I look forward to seeing you back here next week. Until then, this is your host, Dr. Amy, sending you lots of love.